This is Oklahoma Perspective. Today on Oklahoma Perspective, we're talking to Dr. Derek Matheson, welcoming him back. Derek, we did this last year. It seems like it was only yesterday, as they say, but here we are again talking about the Remy Cup Drive for a Cure. So welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Yes, it does seem just like yesterday.
Now, again, let's talk just very quickly about the event, when it's going to happen, and then we want to talk a little bit about your daughter, Remy. So tell us, first of all, the golf tournament, when it's going to be, and is you know, your website, where they would go to find out more information.
Sure, you bet. So the tournament this year is on Sunday, October 1st, and it is being held once again at the Cherokee Golf Club, which is at the Hard Rock Casino Hotel and Resort in Catoosa, Oklahoma. Tea time is usually around noon. We usually have a big lunch / breakfast about 11 a.m., have a presentation, and then we tee off about noon and play till 4, 4:30.
All right, so let's go back a little bit. The reason that you're doing this is it's motivated by your daughter and a condition that she had from birth. So it's called Angelman syndrome. Is that correct? Is that the way you say it?
Yes. It's actually named, as a lot of rare diseases are, by the physician who discovered them. And this was an English physician back in the 1960s named Harry Angelman.
Okay.
And he described several children with a similar disorder. And, you know, we finally found the characteristics and the genetics in the 80s. And the rest is history.
How many kids do you have?
We have five children.
Yeah, five children, and Remy was your fifth.
She was our youngest.
All right, so she's
she was our youngest. Yes.
So let's talk about that a bit, because you know, anyone who's been a parent knows that when you've got a toddler, a newborn, they're such a handful, and then in your situation, you have four kids, and then you have the fifth. Tell us what happened, and just go through the situation with us as you try to discover what the issues were.
She was our fifth. She was born in 2016, and all the early period of her infancy was nothing unusual. Everything seemed to be A-OK. She was growing well. She was sleeping well. But then we started to notice the delays. We started noticing the delays with the sitting and the standing and eventually the walking. And then the speech didn't come. And that's one of the hallmarks of Angelman, is they are all essentially nonverbal patients. But that's one of the things that actually led to the delay was for the first 9 to 12 months, it was a routine childhood. Okay. But once we saw the significant delays, we got her into therapy. You know, they knew something was wrong, but they just couldn't quite put a finger on what it was. Just because of the rarity of this disease, it didn't fit any of the usual patterns, such as cerebral palsy or Down syndrome. And then finally, when she was about 2 years of age, we got into genetic testing, and about age 2.5, we finally discovered through genetic testing that it was Angelman syndrome.
So now you said she was born in 2015. Did I hear that correctly?
2016.
Okay, so she's seven now?
Yes,
all right.
She's seven.
So at this point, when she's first born, you said that the first 9 months were uneventful as far as any of the symptoms that you're talking about. And then after that, things came along slowly, if they came at all. So
right.
You're a doctor, and I remember talking to you about this last year. Even as a doctor going through this, because it is such a rare disease, you have access to things that normal people wouldn't, but it was still frustrating to try to figure out what was going on, wasn't it?
Oh, you bet. The pediatrician that actually, or the pediatric neurologist that actually diagnosed her is a friend of mine, a colleague. And it was a shot in the dark to him. And, you know, he was a pediatric neurologist. He was just saying, hey, it could be. I don't know. And we ended up doing the genetic testing and finding it that way. Now, having said that, Remy is on the rarer side of Angelman. She's fairly high functioning compared to the model Angelman patient. Most of the children will have much more profound deficits that would be noticeable earlier on. Remy's kind of a model Angelman patient as far as what we're trying to get the children to from a functional standpoint. And so that complicated the diagnosis because she wasn't far off of a neurotypical child.
How far did you, you mentioned that the doctor who finally diagnosed it was a colleague of yours, but how far did you go in terms of trying to do research on what was going on? You must have gone outside of Tulsa. Where did it take you?
We stayed in the Tulsa area. Once again, the hard part was is nobody could really say, you know, her deficiencies were mild.
Okay.
They weren't severe or profound like we do see in a lot of the Angelman children. She had not developed seizures at that time, which is a hallmark of Angelman. She had not developed GI issues that were consistent with Angelman. So, you know, she was getting by her day to day. She was just slowly a slow developer. And so, you know, we weren't, you know, super concerned because she was working with therapy. She was, you know, eating well. She was growing. But we just knew that something was not clicking, especially when it came to the verbal aspect, you know, not developing any words. Tulsa does have, you know, a few pediatric neurologists, and we were able to get into clinic with them. They were able to do an MRI and EEG, which did not show any overt abnormalities, but he agreed that just something was not right, and that's when we progressed to genetic testing.
So you go through the genetic testing and you find the Angelman marker. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a marker on the genes. Do you know how many children suffer from this worldwide?
What we believe, is 1 in 15,000.
Okay.
Now, I say why we believe is because a lot of these children go undiagnosed. Matter of fact, I saw a patient this last year in the ER in Tahlequah. She was 18 years of age, and her entire life they had told her that she had autism. And just within the last 6 months, they finally genetic tested her, and she has Angelman syndrome.
How does that change the approach for her in terms of treatment?
Well, the biggest thing is if we are able to develop a treatment, which we are, currently working on, you know, through the universities and the pharmaceutical companies, Angelman syndrome is one of the neurological developmental conditions that we believe we can eventually have a treatment for. And that's with gene therapy, you know, replacing the missing gene.
Right.
Autism, we haven't yet dialed down to a specific gene. It has so many genes that are in interplay that we don't have a specific target, you know, that would have a therapeutic approach. But this, you know, Angelman syndrome is a one gene target that we know that we can, you know, hopefully future manipulate. So she's at least has some hope now of having a genetic therapy within the future.
I remember that you talked about that last year. In terms of the gene therapy. Now, within the community, as far as the young people who suffer from this disease, is there a good support group? Do you know where everybody is? Do you talk, communicate?
Oh, yes. There's two major national foundations. The one that we support, the one that our local chapter of is the FAST, which is the Foundation for Angelman Syndrome Therapeutics. And the other one is the Angelman Syndrome Foundation, ASF. Both of them are stronger in different parts of the country, but we belong to the FAST, which is the Foundation for Angelman Syndrome Therapeutics. But the nice thing is we have a registry, and we as a family, if there's a new diagnosis in the state of Oklahoma, they're given my wife's number. They reach out to her, say, "Hey, how did you deal with this? How do you cope with this? Or what kind of therapy did you get your child in?" So there is a good support group. The other thing we also talk about is the national clinics. There's no Angelman syndrome clinic specifically in Oklahoma, but we do have one in Texas, which is, you know, not terribly far.
So Remy is seven now. What are the therapies that she's going through to help her with this?
So with this being a neurodevelopmental disorder, she obviously has gross and fine motor impairment, as well as this speech impairment. One of the hallmark signs of Angelman syndrome is usually lack of speech. I think one of the best ones ever had 7 or 8 words. So she has the ability to understand words that you speak, you know, talk to her. Her receptive language is essentially normal. You can tell her, hey, go get your book, go get your pajamas. It's time to go to the bathroom. And she can understand that. She just verbally can't speak. But she knows what she wants to say. So we've taught her sign language. She has 50 to 60 signs. We have also taught her on the language development apps on the iPads, apps that are algorithm-based that can speak for her. She can get on her app and pretty much tell us anything that she wants. She can tell us when she's ready to eat. She can tell us when she's ready to go to bed. She just verbally can't say them.
How about her scholastic achievement? How is that progressing?
Oh, it's going well. So she just finished kindergarten this last year, and she just started first grade this year. But she scored 100% on all her colors. She scored in the 80-some percent on her letters, which, is not quite at standard. But she's working, and she loves going to school, and the teachers love having her. She just the teaching is just different.
Right.
Instead of they show her a color, and she gets on her iPad, and it's purple. It's black. She can do it, but she just has to do it through her iPad.
Right. Okay. So does she get to just be in a regular school classroom, or are there special? Is it a special ed type of a situation?
Oh, yeah, she's in a special needs classroom. But the interesting part, she's at Stone Canyon in Owosso. The interesting part is out of, I think, the 10 kids in her class, six of them are on the iPad speaker like she is.
Oh, well, that's...
And then they learn from each other, too. Now, granted, they all don't have the same diagnosis, but, there's other ones that can't speak as well. And the teachers are well-versed in these iPad applications. And six of the 10, I think, use the iPad to speak.
Now, you mentioned last year, of course, earlier today, you talked about gross motor skills. But I know that you mentioned last year that one of the things that she likes to do is just ride her bike in the neighborhood. So there's a certain amount of coordination that goes into that. But she's been able to do that fairly well.
Yeah, she still continues to progress. I mean, you can see an obvious difference between her and a neurotypical child, but it doesn't slow her down. She loves to go to the park. She gets on all the big toys. She goes down the slide. We're still working on swimming on our own. She still is requiring, flotation assist device, but she's now putting her head underwater with her floats and trying to be more independent with it. Just when we take the floats off her, she tends to sink a little bit.
Okay. Well, we all do that. All right. So let's.
She loves she loves working on it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the gene therapy. What does that entail? And then with that, let's assume that tomorrow they have this major breakthrough and it becomes something that they can immediately start working with people who have suffered from this. Will it be something that can help Remy, or is it something that would be only effective at an earlier stage?
No, with our mouse models, this is effective all the way through adult age mice. The hardest part is when you use the term gene therapy, it makes it sound as if there's just one therapy. The goal of our national foundation is what we call how many shots on goal can we take? Just like if you're playing soccer, if you're playing basketball, playing hockey, the more shots on goal you take, the odds are you're going to score more, correct?
Right.
So what we do is we don't put all of our eggs in one basket. If just one university or one pharmaceutical company says, hey, we've got one idea, that's not the only therapy that we are funding at this time.
You're running at it from several different areas, from several different starting points.
That's right. So it's a little bit too complicated to talk about all of them.
Right.
But just the general term of gene therapy, would suffice.
That covers a lot of different possibilities.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so we've got trials in one part of the country working on, bone marrow transplantation. Or bone marrow therapy, where you take somebody's healthy bone marrow that has a healthy Angelman gene. We've got ones that directly inhibit the dad's gene to allow him to start producing the gene just like the mother does. So there's a handful of different ones. We just don't want to get caught of putting all of our eggs in one basket.
Right. So how close are you? I know we talked last year, and I think you mentioned that it was just so close to having something that might work.
We are in the early phases of human trials.
So the Remy Cup. I'm a golfer. Tell me what I need to do to get involved with this.
So the easiest way is to go to the website. It's just remicup.com, R-E-M-I-C-U-P.com. And you can either register as a single, double, or a foursome. It's $150 per golfer, so it'd be a $600 for a four-person team. You get a breakfast included. It's at the Cherokee Hills Golf Course at the Hard Rock Casino. We have great prizes this year. Odds are you're not going to win. We have some ringers that show up to this tournament, but we have drawings, you know, for the teams that have no chance of winning. But it's a scramble format, and it's just a good time. We always pick a Sunday afternoon to stay away from college football and kids' soccer games. But it's a great Sunday afternoon in October, the prettiest month of the year in Oklahoma. I mean, what couldn't be better than that? Knowing that this type of donation on a good golf course is going for a good cause.
Now, do you have a maximum number of golfers that you can service with this, or is it just everybody?
That's the hard part is, you know, the golf course can only hold so many.
Right.
I mean, we had a great turnout last year. You know, if you had a foursome on every hole, that's 72. We ended up with a little over 80 golfers last year. And the way you can do that is on, you know, the long par fives is, you know, putting two teams on a par five. But we've set the maximum, I believe, at 108, which would be, let's see, what is that? Nine holes, you know, so every other hole has two teams on it just whenever they get out of range. But, yeah, probably 108 is our maximum. But, hey, I'd love – hey. Force me to turn this into a morning session and afternoon session. I would love to raise the money for that.
What about sponsorships? I noticed on the website here, are you still looking for some sponsors?
Oh, yeah. We could always use hole sponsors. I had a client last year tell me that he'd never seen a charity event as well done as this, as far as the signage, as far as the advertisement. If you're willing to sponsor a hole for your client or company, it's better than any golf tournament I've ever seen.
Well, okay. All right. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, to sponsor a hole, $500, you get a big, we have a big key, a big wooden key that has your company logo on the hole. It's great.
All right. So again, this is October the 1st. And it's, if you want to go to the website, it's www.remicup.com, and all the information can be found there. And sounds like you're going to have a good time.
I hope so. Hope for good weather.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Derek Matheson with Remy's Drive for a Cure, we certainly appreciate you being with us today.
I appreciate it.
This has been Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.